Welcome to Brad Golf Podcast, a podcast for the average golfer. My name is Dermot Bradfield and golf is in my blood. Join me as I fumble my way around this fascinating sport. Welcome to Brad Golf. It's the 4th of November, 2020. This is episode 24 of the Brad Golf Podcast series. This week, we're going to recap on Bermuda. We'll look at Nigel's picks for the Houston Open. Or Nigel, is it Houston or Houston? Tell me.
Houston.
Okay, thank you. Not the way they spell
Houston,
it.
Houston, we have a problem.
Well, the way they spell it is Houston. Yeah, like it's H-E-U for Houston. But anyway, we'll get to that in a moment. We'll discuss the current events on the PGA Tour and back at home as well. Please do subscribe to the podcast. You'll find Brad Golf TV on Anchor, Google, Apple, Spotify, and other podcast platforms. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. It was a busy week on social media for Brad Golf TV, but you'll find Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, and many more. You'll find bradgolf.ie on Facebook. Please contact us as well at bradgolftv@gmail.com. So Nigel, let's get this party started. Hello, Nigel, and welcome. It's at least one good result for the Rebel County this weekend with Denny McCarthy, who we're claiming to be from Cork, getting a place at Bermuda. How are you, Nigel?
I'm good. I'm very happy about Denny's performance of the weekend because he saved what was looking like a bit of a dicey week. But he had a wonderful 64 on Sunday, 8 birdies. He looked like he could have gone even lower.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like he had a chance to win it, though. I think he was coming from too far back. But I was just glad he hung on to get the place and cover the week.
Yeah. Fantastic. And Nigel, on the subject of good results for trickydogleg.com, you've got this new page there on trickydogleg.com that I think people need to look at. And it kind of really demonstrates, since we've come back at least, what an impact you have had and how great the results have been. So that page, you'll find it on trickydogleg.com, and it's basically your tipping record. So you have some information in there since June. Tell us a little bit. Run us through that, Nigel, because it's kind of scary, actually, how well you've been performing.
Yeah. Well, basically, we've been in profit every month since June, apart from September. And overall, we've run a profit of 150 points, which is over, you know, it's almost 4 months now. That's pretty tasty, if I don't mind saying so myself.
Yeah,
obviously, big. We've had some very spectacular wins. In June, the RBC Heritage was a very profitable time when Simpson gave us our first winner post the first lockdown. Considering we're back in the second lockdown now. July was getting a bit bare until Sam Horsfield provided us a winner in the Hero Open at the end of July. August was probably our best month. We've over 100 points profit for August. Clearly, the big winner was the PGA winner with Morikawa coming first, and then DJ coming second. That was quite a proud moment for the website. And of course, at the end of the month, we got John Rahm with that memorable snaking 80-foot plus putt to win the BMW. September was lean. I was starting to doubt myself in September. We did get a good US Open with two good each ways, but the rest of the tournaments weren't great.
To be honest, at this stage, I was doing interviews, Nigel, with other people to get in to replace you. So it was looking dodgy at that stage, yeah.
I was thinking about cashing in myself. But of course, last week, good old Patrick Cantlay obliged with a fantastic win, so to put us well in profit for October. And of course, Denny McCarthy has kept us from losing too much money last week. So we're looking good. We're looking very good.
Great. Yeah. So moving on then, we've got the Bermuda. So let's recap on the Bermuda. A great result for Brian Gay, winning the playoff. He birdies his first playoff hole to win. Perfect course for the short hitters. As he said in his interview afterwards, how did you feel it went for him over the course of the week?
It was a fantastic win for him, I have to say, considering he'd no form going into it. He had been a bit on my radar considering he was, I think he was in the top five in last year's Bermuda Championship. So he clearly loves the course, but he had no form whatsoever going into the tournament. I think he might have been some places as high as 200-1. A certain Irish bookmaker, I think I had him shorter than that, about 125 or 150-1. But I think he was only short there because of what happened last year. He had no form going in. I watched a lot of it on Sunday and earlier in the week. I thought Wyndham Clark was absolutely going to win it easy. But he kept chipping away at the lead. And Wyndham Clark had a putt to win it on 18 in the 72nd hole. Missed that. And once you're in a playoff with Brian Gay, you don't come out on the wrong on the right side. So yeah. He's a very short hitter, but he's an unbelievable putter and a great wedge player. So, you know, he did the business, got the birdie on the first playoff hole, and Wyndham Clark was probably thinking, what happened there? It was also a great win for the 40-plus people. He's almost 49, so it kind of gave me a sense of renewed optimism.
Well, there's also someone else in there who might give us all some renewed optimism. So further back in the field, but still the fourth time in history, we had a 64-year-old making the cut, Nigel, averaging less than 245 yards off the tee. Fred Funk.
The Funkster, yeah. Absolutely legend. Legend. Former players champion. His son was playing in the group with him on the first 2 days. And his son didn't make the cut, but he made good old Fred Funk made the cut. Clearly, he's still got a game that can get around a shorter track. I don't think he'd be very good at Augusta or Bethpage or something like that.
Yeah,
he'd probably be hitting three woods for every shot. But yeah, fair play to him. 64-year-old. He plays every now and again on the Champions Tour.
He clearly picks and chooses depending on the length of the course, yeah. I've no doubt. But great to see. From Irish interest, then we had very respectable performance by the two Irishmen in the field. Padraig Harrington tied 26th, 6 under, and Seamus Power 2 shots back, tied 37th. Two better than respectable, good performances from the Irish golfers abroad. What do you think of their form?
I thought Padraig was going to challenge a bit more. He was nicely positioned going into the weekend. And I thought with the windy conditions may play into that grinding style he sometimes has. But he didn't do much on Saturday. And at that stage, he was too far back to really challenge. So a little bit disappointing with Padraig on that front. Seamus did well because he only scraped in on to make the cut. And he had a pretty good weekend. So good to see him getting, it's his first check of the new season. So hopefully he'll use that as a springboard. I don't think he's getting that many playing opportunities this year because of his tour card status. He doesn't have full status. So he can only get into certain events. But at least he got some points on the board anyway for the FedEx.
Exactly. Moving away slightly from Bermuda before I go into other news. We don't really talk about the PGA Champions Tour, the Tour Champions. But Darren Clarke got his first win since the Open over the weekend. Did you get to see any of that?
I only heard about it. I didn't see any of it. He shot 62 on the second round, I believe. Yeah, great victory for Darren. He's been kind of threatening on the Champions Tour the last few weeks. I think he had a problem. He's after getting himself stuck in the Bahamas. That's where he lives kind of half the year over there. And I think he forgot his passport or some sort of visa issue. And I think he won't be able to make this week's event in the Charles Schwab Cup because he's of some visa issues. So he's stuck over there in his local bar.
Yeah, I'd say that's a real challenge for him. Yeah, well done. Well done, Darren. We're delighted for you. Great to see Irish players doing well abroad. Okay, so moving on then to other news. So let's come away from the PGA and back home maybe for a while. So the lockdown continues in Ireland, much to our frustration, no doubt. But it's about to start in England. So we've got from Thursday this week, that's tomorrow, I should say, Thursday the 5th of November, there's the lockdown is affecting England's golf. So Jeremy Tomlinson, who's the CEO of England Golf, said, look, as a result of this announcement, and with the health of the nation very much at the heart of my thinking, I'd like to make clear England Golf's intention to respectfully challenge the government's rationale for closing golf courses. So clearly they're putting up a fight, maybe more of a fight than what was done locally here in Ireland, you could argue. Now, whether they're going to get anywhere with that fight or not is another story. But as he stated in his letter to the golfers in England, he said at no point was England Golf, as the governing body for the amateur game of golf in this country, consulted about this decision. So England golfers are going to feel the pain that Irish golfers are going through at the moment. What's your view on this, Nigel? How do you feel about these lockdowns in UK and Ireland?
Well, as I said last week, I don't agree with them. It's interesting to see that the Golfing Union of England, or England Golf, or whatever their name is, are at least fighting their corner.
Yeah.
It would seem that in Ireland, we made some behind-the-scenes representations, but really didn't fight enough. I think the point could have been made a lot more strenuously, considering other things that are going on in society. I think this would have helped the mental health of a large section of the population, because getting out for around the golf for the weekend is good for the head, you know, and it's of a lot of people we know anyway. And I'm definitely feeling the absence of golf with every day. I'm dying for a game at the moment, but we'll put up with it for another while. Hopefully, I don't know, the government are going to review restrictions, I know, later in the month. Perhaps they may lift the restrictions a bit early. Hopefully, when cases are coming down, maybe Golf Ireland can make the case again for reopening clubs.
Yeah, and if they're going to roll back anything, you'd imagine sport would be one of the the earlier ones to come back, particularly outdoor sports, because they're so crucial for mental health. So let's keep the fingers crossed there, and our sympathies to our England fans, our English golfers who listen to the pod here. We feel your pain. Second news, big news. This has made all the major press releases at the moment. I passed my RNA Rules 2 exam over the weekend, Nigel, so that's been covered heavily there in Sky Sports at the moment.
So congratulations for that.
Yeah, absolutely thrilled. It was something that actually during COVID there, during the summer, I decided to sign up for it, and really only got around to finishing it out this weekend. The pressure was on to do it this weekend, so delighted to get that done.
I expect to see you on the European Tour when...
Absolutely, yeah.
Sergio Garcia calls for a ruling.
But I'm looking out for Patrick Reed. I tell you, I'm just going to stalk him for a while and sort him out. I think that's what I'm going to do. And also... the third item in my news is just a small thing that happened over the weekend, WHS. So I don't know if you saw that, Nigel. There was some handicapped stuff happened this weekend.
There was a lot of changes in handicaps or new handicaps given out to people.
Yeah, so without going back over all the detail of it, and obviously I'd recommend people listen to our last pod, we got incredible feedback from it, Nigel, both on social media, WhatsApp, you name it. My phone was absolutely hopping with questions about WHS, and we might address a few of those here in today's session. But Nigel, if I bring you back to your pod, you said, I'm going to quote you on this, you said, my handicap is currently 6.3 under Congu. I anticipate I'll move to 5.6. What is your current handicap index on Golf Ireland?
My new handicap index under the WHS system is 4.1.
Whoa, you were a shot and a half. Yeah, a shot and a half below where you thought you'd be. So just for yourself personally, what do you feel about that number? Like, obviously you're surprised because last week when I spoke to you, less than a week ago, you said 5.6 is where you thought you'd be. So that's a shot and a half below there. What's your view on that?
Well, I was very surprised, very, very surprised. I was expecting that maybe I might, as I said, 5.6, 5.5 was my kind of feeling. I've went to kind of try and calculate it again myself with the the formulas there, and what I like, I've looked up the RNA's slope indexes and course ratings for Donabate and other away courses that kind of make up my 20. And I still think at the biggest stretch that I'm possibly a half a shot, at least a half a shot, if not a full shot, lower than expected.
Right.
But I'm going to accept it, and I'm going to, this is, I suppose, with such a massive amount of information transferring from one system to another, it was always inevitable this sort of thing would happen. I'm going to accept it and try and play off that for the time being, obviously when golf eventually comes back.
Yeah.
And hopefully it'll work itself out.
Yeah. So for myself, I was 5 point... What was it? I was 5.9, actually 5.7, I should say. I did say in the podcast that I was 5.9. I wasn't. I was 5.7 on Kongu, and I said I would move up to 6.3. So I thought I was going to increase about 0.6, and I did not. I moved down.
Can I ask you first of all?
Yes, you can.
Why did you think you were going to increase?
So I thought I was going to increase on the basis of having probably my most inconsistent summer on the golf course. So I felt, when I look back at it, I didn't do any calcs because I purposely didn't want to do calculations until the new system came into place, where I would look at things in a bit more detail. I just wanted to go on gut feel. And my gut feel was I probably 3 or 4 good rounds all summer. That's all. Which would have been my lowest in probably 3 or 4 years playing golf. And when I mean good rounds, like sub 80. There were very few of them this summer. So I just thought, on that basis, the lack of inconsistency, lack of good scores in my pot, it was likely to lead to an increase in my handicap. It also jumped around a bit. As you said, I went to 6.5 at one stage under Kongu and back down again to 5.7. So it was hopping around a bit as well, which was an indication of how inconsistent I was. So I felt, looking at it over the summer, I was likely to get an increase. But as it turns out, I'm also down into the fours. 4.9, though, not as low as yourself. So I hang on to my 5 handicap under the new system. 4.9. So you're ahead of me. There's been a swing here, quite a significant swing, in that I was 6.6 better than you. Now you're 0.8 better than me. So 1.4 swing there. Yeah. So from talking to lots and lots of members of Donabate Golf Club, I'm yet to meet someone who got any shots back. So that's the major piece of feedback that I'm seeing, is that most Donabate golfers have seen a decrease. And Nigel, you uncovered a bit of an issue in how our handicap indexes were calculated. So rather than stealing your thunder, tell us what you discovered there on, I think it was Sunday, that you highlighted this.
Well, I noticed that I don't really want to get into too much specifics about the club, but I suppose I should say it now that you've teed me up, so to speak. But essentially, the calculations, when the transfer conversion was done from one system to another, they used on a kind of a default basis almost the blue-red as the course, or whenever there was the red courses involved, they took whatever the slope rating and course rating was as given by the GUI now Golf Ireland. But for most of the summer, pretty much the whole summer, the red 9 in Donabate has not been parsed 36, and their calculations have gone on, and the conversion calculations that have been done from Kongu to WHS seem to have all been done on the assumption that the red 9 was a par 36 for all those competition scores, when in fact, for most of it was below, at least one shot, if not two shots below that, because of the construction that's been going on and the redesign of holes on 7 and 8. And that was not taken into account from what I can see.
Yeah.
So, and I think that's part of the reason why myself and many others have gotten such a big cut.
Correct. So the big issue is the slope. So, you know, people have been saying to me, well, yeah, the power this and the power that. And actually, it's nothing to do with power. So power on the new system is irrelevant. It doesn't matter what your power is. It's the slope from which we can calculate these things. So if the slope for your...
Can I just put it, yeah. It's not just the slope, it's the course rating as well.
Correct, sorry. Yeah, if I can just look at, say, the red. So if we play red-yellow, if you're playing off the full length of that course, red-yellow, over the course of the summer, when it would have been a par 72, but off the full length of the course, that's what the slope rating is given for. And the course rating, they're given on the basis of you playing the full length of that course, not a shortened length of that course. But over our summer, we played, as you said, 7 red and 8 red from temporary tees, much shortened from what we would normally play off throughout the summer. So therefore, we could not possibly play to that slope or to that course rating. So there needs to be an adjusted slope and an adjusted course rating for any course combination that included red. Now, to be fair, that's not that Donabate Golf Club sat down and they transferred all the data. This is all happening at GUI level. So in the calculations that are being performed on the WH system, it's all outside of Donabate's remit, to be fair. So to be fair to our handicap chairman and chair ladies, it's been completely out of bounds for the Donabate Golf Club. This is an issue that they've raised with the GUI as to how the standard, as you said, the standard course rating and slope rating were used to calculate cards off the red nine in particular. So since I've done a little bit of digging there, it now appears as well, it's been confirmed to me that the slope is still in development for Donabate Golf Club. So it's not officially complete. So even the slope that they are using in these calculations at the moment are not the confirmed slope that was performed maybe a month ago by the GUI. So that's still in development and there will be changes to slope shortly is what I've been told. But I would expect that in the coming days, if not weeks, that we'll see a new slope for Donabate Golf Club.
All right, so the handicap, it's going to change again.
Yeah. So on the basis of us waiting on a slope and likely to receive a new slope, unless it comes back as identical to the slope that we have at the moment. But if there's any slope changes, that has to result in a handicap change because therefore our slope will be different. The calculation for handicap will be different. So you may see a change in your handicap again. We are harder than Portmarnock on one of the combinations. I can't remember which combination it is, and I'm not comparing to the back stakes in Portmarnock, but we are coming in as harder than Portmarnock in one of our combinations, which strikes me as...
That's the blue-red.
I think it is, yeah.
Or red-blue. Yeah. So, which I was surprised about.
Yeah. So we'll just have to wait and see. I think I would say to people, be patient. Expect some changes in the coming weeks. You know, I had people contact me over the weekend saying, well, I was X on Saturday. And then on Monday, I moved down 0.2 or up 0.2 or whatever the case may be. What is going on? So just to clarify that on Monday, the October cards were added to people's index. So what people saw on Sunday was up until towards the end of September. October cards were added on Monday, which gave us the our new indexes on Monday. So for most golfers in Ireland, the index they received on Monday is their handicap index. I would say for Donabate golfers and other golf clubs as well, like the island where there was any work being performed on their course, there's likelihood to be some adjustments made in the coming weeks. I will say to our handicap committee, best of luck. I mean, I dodged a bullet coming off the handicap committee this year. This is clearly the worst year to be on the handicape committee. There's no doubt about it. Donabate Golf Club, 200 plus members, new members coming in. So that's a lot of cards to key in. But clearly this system has not been what we've been promised. So the GUI and England Golf said, and I quote, that 80% of golfers are going to see a very marginal change to their handicap. And from what I've seen in the research I've done, it's over 80% of golfers are seeing a significant impact to their handicap. Well, at least that's local research in Donabate Golf Club, but the impact is quite significant and not as little as we've been told. Would you agree with that view or am I overblowing it, Nigel?
Well, definitely we've seen it in our own club. I know someone in another club on the south side who's also got a two-shot cut, and it's similar sort of situation where there are two courses or two variations of the course that play at different slope ratings and different course ratings. And I don't know if they were treated as one or whatever, but they also got a two-shot cut. So now we have a lot of local information. We've got loads of local information. And I don't think that we can say it's representative of a general problem, but from my own kind of feeling, I think there is definitely a change in I think people have definitely gotten lower handicaps than they were expecting.
Yeah, I think it's going to take some bedding down, this one. I think it's going to take some bedding down. We're going to find maybe for the next, maybe next year, we'll have some bizarre results, I think, until this beds down. Its impact on Interclub could be quite significant as well. So we shall wait and see. One question we did get in, and we didn't cover it in the pod, so I will last week. So I will just cover it. This came in from Gary Murray. He says, when you mentioned last week that you're required to state or notify if you want a round to count towards your handicap, to whom does this notice need to be given? Gary asked. So do you want to have a go at that, Nigel, or will I come back on an answer for you?
I think it just needs to be, either registered on a computer system or registered in a logbook, possibly in the pro shop, or at least in somewhere in the clubhouse. I don't think you need to physically address someone, but you definitely need to put it through a system that's accepted.
So Golf Ireland has said it falls to the committee of that club to determine how you are to notify them that a card is to count for handicap purposes. So as they said as well, that may well be a login at a computer. That may well be a logbook that sits on a table that you need to refer to. It could be an app. It could be a multitude of ways. But it's likely to be a very common question that the pro shop will have an answer to at whatever club you're in, that you say, right, I want this to count. What do I do? And they'll say, go over there and sign that book, or yeah, just log in the computer and off you go. So it will be down to each club to determine how they do that, but there has to be some formal way of that happening. Yeah, as you said, Nigel, it's not like you need to go up to the bar and explain it to the captain. It won't be something as formal as that, but there need to be some process in which you need to do it before you go out on the course, and not something that you make your mind up on as you're out on the course. So thanks, Gary, for that question. Gaza, thank you very much. Right, next up, moving on from WHS to the Masters. So the Masters is fast approaching, Nigel, and I thought we might do an early intro to it today with a few taster questions on the Masters. So I'm going to start with what's your earliest memory of the Masters?
Well, my earliest memory is 1986, when it was first shown on it was on BBC at the time. And it was, of course, the year that Jack Nicklaus made his big comeback on the back nine to win his sixth Masters. It was, that's really the earliest memory. It was the first one on the BBC. It was just kind of amazing, really.
Yeah.
Awe-inspiring kind of way to watch golf, because I'd watched, you know, any golf that had been on TV when I was a kid was always either the Open Championship or the Irish Open. Things always look kind of grey, windswept, tough golf. I really enjoyed it, but I didn't see so much kind of sunshine and colour, and it just looked sort of otherworldly when I first saw it. So yeah, and just Jack Nicklaus's charge in the back nine was just incredible.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
Although we're not too fond of Jack anymore, considering a certain tweet that he made last week, but that's for another day.
He's a little bit pro-Trump, right? Yeah, just a little bit.
A little bit.
So, well, what a great one to start with. I mean, for me, it was nearly around the same time, but it was 3 years later to that, 1989. And it's not the memory of Nick Faldo winning his first US Masters, but it was actually Scott Hoke missing from 2, maybe 3 feet.
I remember that, yeah.
And not just missing the putt, but missing the hole in completely. It was such a a nervy putt and ultimately losing the green jacket to Faldo, who I must admit at the time, I think you mentioned it in an earlier pod as well, but he was the one that I was a huge fan of, I suppose, being from Ireland and next door to the UK, but also being, you know, a big fan of European golf. Nick Faldo was the man, and I was a big fan of him during those 2 years, 89 and 90, when he won back-to-back Masters. But for me, it was that putt. It's that putt. I can still see it. And when I used to play pitch and putt at the time, you know, whenever you had the short putts, it was don't choke, don't pull a Scott Hoke. So, yeah, I mean, that's something that will always live with me, I think, is the 1989. Next question up, Nigel. But actually, before I go there, I have to agree with you. And where I worry a little bit is, I haven't looked at any of the packed pictures of Augusta in the last, you know, couple of weeks. I'm interested to see how different it's going to look with our first autumn US Masters. And you said the sunshine and the color. That's something that always jumped out of the television screen at me, when I used to watch the Masters, particularly as a kid. But even today, it's just the amazing color in the flora and fauna on the course. Are we going to have you looked at any of these at these pictures to see what Augusta is looking like this time of year?
No, I haven't actually. I've been very much kind of consumed with the day-to-day cut and thrust of the PGA Tour. The Masters, a lot of the time, is very much a television spectacular.
Yeah.
And it is going to be very strange without the fans. Potentially the course will look different because for April, when it's normally on, they make sure all the flowers bloom at exactly the right time. I've heard all sorts of tricks that they do to make sure the azaleas bloom specifically for that week. I don't know what they're going to do, if they'll put in fake ones or
Photoshop.
They have a very strict regime. They have a strict regime on everything to do with the Masters.
Yeah.
The TV coverage has to come on at a certain time. There are only a certain amount of ads. They have to do it in a certain way. There's also something different or kind of similar to last year in a way, but this year it's actually been planned. Last year, the final round when Tiger won was started early due to, I think it was a weather warning was coming in, and they all the tee times went more than a couple hours. I think it was 3 or 4 hours early. So if you cast your mind back to watching it last April 2019, the Masters finished about 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock Irish time. Normally it finishes about midnight. So it's going to be something similar this year, and it's because the Masters doesn't want to compete with the NFL for ratings. So while the other rounds will be similar in that you can sit on your couch at 8 or 9 in the evening and sit back with a beer and watch the golf, it's going to be a bit earlier on the Sunday, so just keep that in mind.
Great. Thank you. Yeah. So, favourite hole, Nigel. So, you have to pick one.
Wow. I'd say probably the 13th, the par 5 13th.
Great choice. So for me, it's the 12th, right? Visually the 12th. But for the drama, and often where it's won, I would pick the 13th as well. So I was going to cheat after you gave your answer and say, well, it's Amen Corner for me. I think just that part of the course, you know, you hear the shouts echo in there into Amen Corner. And there's a lot of places.
That's another thing, though. You hear the shouts. What shouts are you going to hear this year?
Exactly. Four left. That's all you're going to hear.
Four, yeah.
Yeah. It definitely will be strange, that's for sure. And I agree, the 13th. For me, it's the 13th because I feel like if I was to win the Masters, that's where I'd win it, right? Obviously, I'm not going to win the Masters, but that's where I'd win it.
But there's also, the 13th actually won't be too, actually the 13th is called Azalea, appropriately enough. The 13th won't be too much different pretty much to previous years, because if you think about it, the 13th is probably the one hole, and the 12th is to a certain extent as well, where fans are kept back. There's no fans to the tee. at the 12th green, and then and as you turn around to the to go around the back of the green, and the 13th tee is stuck right back in the trees. There are no fans at that area of the course ever, so that's not going to be an issue. And if you imagine they shoot to the green, the fans are kept well back up near. There's no fans at the green either. The fan, the only the closest the fans can get at the 13th is along the fairway or just the far end of the fairway. And they can possibly see the tee shots from behind the 12th tee. So, you know, Amen Corner isn't actually going to be much different than normal.
Just a noise. Just a noise. But you're right, Zach. Yeah. Remember when Zach Johnson took that practice swing on 13th tee and he clipped the ball? Remember this back in 2019? He's just taking practice swing. Yeah. And that was on the 13th tee, but there was no one around, obviously, because that tee box is very sheltered. There's no one, no fans there. So other than himself and his caddy, no one really saw that. Okay. So moving on then to your favorite champion. Which year or years, if it's a multiple winner?
This is a good question, though. If you'd asked me before last week, I would have said Jack Nicklaus. But he's dead to me now.
Right, okay.
Faldo was always a big favourite of mine. But I thought he won the Masters three times. And he won two of them in playoffs. And the other one he won when Greg Norman collapsed on the Sunday.
Yeah.
So he didn't... He deserved all of them, but he kind of... He ground them down. It wasn't spectacular play. Tiger's victories have been unbelievable. Yeah. And obviously his first victory in 97 was incredible. But
12 shots
while it was incredible record. And it was basically the start of the Tiger era and a kind of a watershed for golf.
Yeah.
It was actually a little, if people really ask themselves, was it that good to watch? It probably wasn't, because you knew Tiger was going to win from the Saturday. So it was actually a little bit boring to watch on the Sunday. There was no edge to it. So I'm trying to think now where of a Masters where it really kind of ebbed and flowed on the back nine. Probably recently, I thought Danny Willett's victory. I'm not a massive fan of Danny Willett, but I thought when Jordan Spieth collapsed, that was quite dramatic. Oh, God damn, you really put me on the spot here now.
What about Sergio even as well for that long-awaited win?
Sergio, that was brilliant. The playoff of Justin Rose, and when he hit the flag on 15.
Nigel, I have your
that
answer.
Was brilliant.
I know what your favorite one is. Stop the press.
Go on,
Patrick Reed. Your big
Patrick Reed, of course, from 2 years ago when I backed him. Yes,
Patrick Reed.
I enjoyed that. I got him a 45-1. That another winner. That was pretty tricky dog leg. But I still had the Midas touch back then. I'm going to say that my favorite winner was Larry Mize in 1987 when he chipped in to make Greg Norman even sicker than he normally is.
Poor old Greg, yeah. Well, for me, it was 1994. So it was Jose Maria. And I suppose I felt such, well, as I'm sure you did as well, such an affinity to European golfers, particularly when they were playing in America, because, you know, for so long, they weren't allowed to play. European players were not allowed to play in the Masters and tournaments like that. But it ended really kind of a 7-year run in which six winners were Europeans. So complete domination of the Masters by European golfers. And that kind of ended that era in 1994. So that one for me, I just felt like we could send any European over there and we'd win the US Masters at that stage. Bernard Langer won the year before. Yeah. So that felt a really nice time, I think, for European golf. And I felt part of that. I was a teenager at the time. I felt like we're invincible, really. So, yeah. And he's such a lovable guy as well. To see him beat Tom Lehman was incredible. Yeah.
So that was a serious run, actually, of European golf. Because Seve won it in 1980, 1983. But I've only seen reruns of it. I've never actually, I didn't see it live. And the only time I saw live was when he actually threw it away in 86 when Jack won. Semi was two shots up on the 15th fairway, and he went for the green, and he was kind of in between clubs and ended up hitting a horrible shot into the water, and that was kind of the start of the end of his chances there. He also made the playoff when Larry Moyes won, but he was out of the playoff on the first playoff hole, and Larry Moyes chipped in on the second one. But in 88, Sandy Lyle's bunker shot, or second shot from the bunker, was definitely a memorable Masters. And of course, 89, Faldo winning after Scott Hogue unbelievably missed that gimme. And then he won again against in the playoff with Ray Floyd. He ground him into the ground. I thought 91 was brilliant when Woslem won. He held that putt on 18. That was a class victory. So yeah, there's been loads. And Langer won in 93 after he actually won in 85 as well. So yeah, there's been some great European victories.
There have been.
Over the years.
Jose Maria following it up again in 99 as well. So yeah.
Yeah.
But look, it's great for Europe. It was in that period at least. Okay, right. Let's move it on. Let's leave the US Masters for now. Just to remind people that we've got the Houston Open this weekend and the following weekend after that. Yeah, that's the US Masters. So make sure you have your TV subscriptions ready to go for that one. Okay, so Nigel, tell us your picks for the Houston Open.
Yeah, there are much more important tournaments than the Masters, and that's the Vivint Houston Open this week on a new course. They're playing at a course called Memorial Park, which is a municipal course redesigned by Tom Doak recently. And also the tournament is cutting a cash infusion from the owner of the Houston Astros, the baseball team. So this tournament, which was, you know, in jeopardy of not existing anymore when it was moved from its original slot, which was as the curtain raiser for the Masters the week before the Masters. It had a lovely kind of position in the calendar, but that was changed back in 2019. It was moved to the autumn or the fall, as the Americans call it, and it had no sponsor last year as such, and there was doubts about whether it would continue to exist, but it's back again. It's back the week before the Masters again, which is a strange but happy coincidence of COVID-19. We have a reasonably strong field this week. We've got Dustin Johnson as the clear favorite, 7-1.
Oh, yeah.
He's back after his COVID-19 diagnosis with a bit of tournament prep for next week. We've also got Brooks Koepka, who's still, you know, on a comeback from injury. We got Tyrrell Hatton, Tony Finau, Russell Henley, Hideki Matsuyama. But our headline selection for this week is the young rookie of the year, Scottie Scheffler, 20-1, 2.5 points each way. Scottie was very unlucky to not compete in the US Open because of his own COVID diagnosis. But he's been clearly a main guy for the future. He managed to win the Rookie of the Year without winning a PGA tournament, but I think this week he's going to change that. Clearly, he had an amazing season last year. He was only second in the actual non-handicapped form of the Tour Championship. At Eastlake. Eastlake has the same type of grass greens as Memorial Park this week for the Houston Open. I think since his diagnosis, he's come back, shown some reasonably solid form, and he seems to be building towards something pretty special. And I think maybe his first Masters will be just an experience for him. And this week he's going to focus and win. So we're putting him up as the headline selection.
Great.
The second selection is Cameron Davis at 60-1, 1 point each way. Cameron has just an amazing swing. He can also swing almost elegantly left-handed. He's just seriously talented, probably the most talented and naturally gifted Australian player to come since Scott. I think he's definitely a winner in waiting. This week's course is going to suit him. It's going to be a birdie fest, I think, this week as well. Tom Doak has said that he's designed the course without thinking about protecting par, which is always a sign that it's going to be a bit of a birdie fest. There's five par fives. There's two drivable par fours in the last kind of six holes. It's going to be a fun tournament. There's actually only 20 bunkers apparently on the course as well.
Wow.
So I don't know. The reason they did that was to kind of reduce the cost of maintenance on the course. Apparently you can play this course for $35. Anyone can play it. You can just rock up. It's a municipal course or public course as we know them over here.
Just sign me up.
So yeah, Cameron Davis can go very good this week.
Another man in around those odds is Shane Lowry, Irishman. He's the leading Irishman in the field at 55-1. What do you fancy his chances? Now, obviously, you haven't picked him, but what do you fancy for his chances? And is this really a prep for next week, or how do you think he's viewing it?
I think it's a prep for next week.
Yeah, okay.
And I think a lot of these players, my picks have generally, apart from Scotty Scheffler and one other one later on, are not guys who are in the field for next week.
Right, gotcha.
I can only think that, like, Dustin Johnson has a chance to win any tournament he turns up in. But 7-1 when he's coming back from illness and a tournament before the Masters is just not really something I'm interested in. He could do it, you know, he's that sort of player. But and similarly, Tony Finau, I think Tyrrell Hatton has been obviously in unbelievable form. 16-1. Again, he'll be thinking about tuning up his game for next week. And Shane Lowry's the same. Shane hasn't really performed in Augusta. He's been there two or three times. And I think his mind will be on performing well and putting up a good showing there. And
yeah, okay, we'll stay away from him this week.
I wouldn't put people off. He could get an each way. I just don't see it.
Yeah, great. No problem. Okay, number three.
Someone I do see and who has served us well over the last month or so, and last week in particular, was Denny McCarthy, 60-1, a point each way. We're not going to desert him quite yet. His closing 64 was a serious eye-catching performance, and I think he can bring that form into Houston this week. He was actually in the top 10 at Houston last year, albeit on a different course. He likes Bermuda greens. He was top 10 at Sedgefield in the Wyndham. You know, he's on a great run of form. He was top 10 at the Sanderson Farms in Jackson, and that's also a Bermuda course.
What did we get him at last week, Nigel?
He was 66-1.
Wow.
Last week. So I think that's fair enough.
Yep.
We got a certain bookmaker is playing 8 places this week, so fill your boots.
And at 60-1, he hasn't dropped that much. So, yeah, let's stick with him.
Yeah, true enough. Fourth selection is a guy we put up about a month ago, I think it was for the Safeway, and he's a much better price than he was then. He's Sam Burns at 8-1, a point each way. Sam loves playing on Bermuda greens. I think he'll go under the radar here. He'll really enjoy this type of course. He's played well. I think it's Quail Hollow is the same sort of greens. And I think at 80-1 is a crazy price for a guy with this much talent and, you know, one for the future.
Great.
The guy who's won at Quail Hollow before and who's the fifth selection is Max Homa at 100-1, 0.75 points each way. Max kind of lost his form there over the summer, after a good showing at the Rocket Mortgage. In Bermuda last week, I saw him on the TV a couple of times. He dealt well with the wind, was solid enough on the weekend. And it kind of just showed to me that he's coming back to his form. And 100-1 is a big price for a guy who's won on the PGA Tour on, as I said, similar greens and in a similar situation. Max Homa is in the field for the Masters next week. So there may be a case that he is, some might say, he's also got a view to next week and tuning up his game. But I think he needs to tune up his game and find some form, first of all. I think that this is where he's going to find it.
Great.
Last week I put up Andrew Putnam, and we're going to put him up again, 151 and a half point each way. He's a lot better priced than he was last week. He was solid. I think he finished in the top 30 last week after a little bit of a quiet start. Again, he's in the field for next week. He qualified. This time last year was top 50 in the world, and his form kind of deserted him since then. But as I said, he's become a father for the second time recently, and we're hoping that nappy factor kicks in at some point.
Great.
Keith Mitchell is our next selection, 200-1, half a point each way. He's a former winner of the Honda Classic on Bermuda Greens. He's a guy who has also lost his form recently, but I also caught him on the TV at Bermuda. He still looks a bit erratic, but, you know, this is the sort of event that kind of brings out his competitive juices. He still made the cut last week, and it was solid enough on the weekend. 200-1 just seems too big a price, really. Another man and our final selection with too big a price, the guy who plays really well in Texas, is Sean O'Hare. Unbelievable record in any of the PGA Tour events that are in Texas. So 300-1, a quarter of a point each way, it's a bit of a no-brainer. So there are selections for this week. Scotty Scheffler, Cameron Davis, Danny McCarthy, Sam Burns, Max Homa, Andrew Putnam, Keith Mitchell, and Sean O'Hare. You can find all these selections on Tredegg.com.
Super. Thanks, Nigel. A few Irish kind of ringing names again this week, which is great. Sean O'Hare, I love it. And Cork hurler Denny McCarthy features again. We could have done with Denny McCarthy in Simple Stadium at the weekend, it must be said. Cork hurler's not.
Against Waterford.
Yeah, they're not up to much at the moment. Denny McCarthy there, he could have done a favour for them, you know, there's no doubt.
I actually want to mention the European Tour
this week.
I don't know if many people watched the Cyprus Open last week on a course. Aphrodite Hills is the name of the resort. It's a PGA kind of national course. I thought it looked really well. I think when you're watching golf on a Sunday and the rain and wind is lashing against the window, and you're looking at sunshine and lovely courses basking in the glow in 25 degree weather, and guys hitting shots without having to worry about waterproofs or anything like that, or just playing golf in general. I thought it was. I didn't put up any selections for it on the website because I didn't really know. But it's the first time the European Tour has ever gone to Cyprus. It's the 50th different country that the European Tour has gone to. And they're at the same course again this week for the Cyprus Showdown, it's called.
Showdown.
It's a different format. It's not just the 72-hole stroke play standard tournament format, which is a classic great format. And there's many reasons why tours have that format. But this week's format is different. We're going to play two rounds of normal stroke play to begin with a cut for the top 32 in ties on Friday evening, rather than the top 65 in ties, which they normally have. And on Saturday, all scores are put to level again. Ooh. And those 32 in ties play another round of stroke play. And at the end of that, the top 16 in ties go through to Sunday. And all scores are leveled again for Sunday. And they play it out to a finish then on Sunday. So it's an interesting format. It's strange for betting purposes because at the moment there's a 36-hole market and then there's an overall market, which is difficult to gauge because this is one of the many kind of innovations that the European Tour has done. They're a bit more adventurous in that way. We've had the Golf Sixes, we've had the Belgian Knockout, we've had the Shot Clock Challenge in Austria, so that, you know, they're always thinking about different things, and a bit more adventurous than the PGA Tour. I think it'll be very interesting to see how it goes on Sunday when there are 16 or so players left. Just interesting to see how it works out, because a 72-hole tournament, there's a certain ebb and flow, and you might still get that sort of similar ebb and flow on the weekend, but you'll have less players and they'll be kind of watching each other a bit more. I'm just keen to see how it all pans out. I think it's a format that could, you know, could be one for the future. Players may have to, you basically have to start playing well straight away.
Yeah.
But then if you get into a good position on, say, a Friday afternoon, you know, you should be good enough. If you play par golf, you'll qualify for the weekend. So you might take your foot a little bit off or play conservative a bit just to make sure you make that cut. So, and then it's all out on Sunday. It's just everyone races for the line. So it's going to be, I'm just keen to see how it pans out. The field in Cyprus isn't great. It's a lot of the players who played last week. But what we do know is we have a full tournament from last week in terms of form. So I may put up some selections for that on Tricky Dog Leg tomorrow.
Well, it's one to watch. I think, yeah, one thing I do have to say about the European Tour, and as you said there, it's that creativity, that willingness to show a bit of innovation in their product. They've done that consistently over the last number of years. So, yeah, just to see the format, I'd be interested in rather than who's playing there. And, yeah, I look forward to that one. Thank you. Okay, right. Well, thanks again, Nigel, for joining us. And we'd see you next week.
No problem, Dermot. Thanks for that. Good luck, everyone.
So just to confirm, this podcast is not sponsored in any way. All views expressed in this podcast are my own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever with which I have been, am now, or will be affiliated. Please do subscribe to the podcast, Brad Golf TV. You'll find me on Spotify, Pocket Casts, Google, etc., etc. Please follow, like, retweet, and share on social media. It's Brad Golf TV on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube. On Facebook, you'll find me at bradgolf.ie. And you can also drop me an email at bradgolftv@gmail.com. Looking forward to hearing from you in the weeks and months ahead. You've been listening to Brad Golf Podcast. Hope you enjoyed today's podcast. Please do come back soon and join me for another round.